Welcome to the Everyday Ultra Podcast, a show designed to help you level up your training, crush your races, and ultimately become a better endurance athlete every single day. Whether you're an endurance athlete as a hobby or someone who wants to be the best in the sport, this is the show for you. I'm your host, Joe Corcione, and thank you so much for listening. Now, let's get into it. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Everyday Ultra Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Corcione, and super excited to dive into this episode with you. Before we start the episode, I want to talk about a tool that I have added to my ultra running toolbox that has helped me a ton with performance, recovery, and overall feeling great during and after long runs and competitions. And a number of my clients and listeners have been raving about this tool now too, because it's been working wonders for a lot of us. The tool is called Play On Relief, and it's an all-natural pain relief spray, which is the first of its kind in the pain relief and recovery space. It's backed by a patented technology that is anti-inflammatory, long-lasting, supernatural, and as I mentioned before, super effective. Even during my long training runs, training for the Cocodona 250, there have been many times where my legs started to feel a little bit more fatigued and tired over long, long hours of training. But in the middle of my long runs, I take out Play On, I spray it on my muscles, and they feel good as new and ready to take on any climbs, any mileage that I'm going to throw up for the rest of the long run. And really, since using it in my training and doing the most volume that I've ever done in my training, my legs feel the best that they've ever felt. They perform the best that they've ever felt. And ultimately, they're recovering faster than ever before. And I credit a lot of this to Play On. And it helps me to give the confidence and the reassurance and feeling internally and confidence in my muscles to carry me farther, not just on race day, but in my training as well. I can't emphasize enough how much this stuff has been such a game changer in my training, and I'm grateful to Play On for coming up with this product. And I'm so grateful and so excited for you to try it out that I'm working with Play On to give you a discount. But what's super cool is they're actually offering a bigger discount during this time, which is 25% off a bottle of Play On. And it's super affordable too, because after that 25%, that bottle's coming out to less than $25 before tax as well. So super excited for you to try it out. They have this sale on for a limited time. So if you want to try Play On, all you need to do is go to the link in the show notes and go and get your 25% off discount on your bottle of Play On Relief so you can help yourself recover better, feel better, prevent soreness, and ultimately get back to the run out there strong as possible. Hope you give it a try, and remember everybody, Play On. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Everyday Ultra Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Corcione, and I'm really pumped to have this episode here for you because this is actually a podcast interview that I was a guest on months ago, and it has been one of my favorite podcast interviews that I've done to date. And the reason why that is because we cover such a wide breadth of topics that can be useful for your ultra marathon training in this episode. We cover how to destroy negative beliefs that might be holding you back, not just in your ultra training, but in your overall life. We cover how to structure your training so you can get the optimal results in the way possible and avoid stagnation in your training. We talk about how to structure speed work in a methodical way. We also talk about why training by mileage is not the best way forward, and actually training by a different methodology might be even more effective for you. And we also talk about fitting in training amidst a busy schedule. So as you can see, we cover a wide range of topics on here. And this was an episode that I did on my friend Chad Lubinsky's podcast, the Peanut Butter and Mountains podcast, which, by the way, if you're looking for a podcast that is all about through hiking and outdoors and adventures, this is a great podcast for you. They cover a wide variety of topics in that area, just even outside of ultra running as well. So if you're into the outdoors, if you're into adventuring, if you're into hiking, this is a great podcast. And shout out my guy, Chad Lubinsky. Follow him on Instagram and everything. He is just such a good dude and a really great content creator in the outdoor space. Can't recommend his stuff enough. So definitely check him out for sure. One thing before we dive into this episode too is just a quick disclaimer. He is a very smart dude and everything like that. Sometimes there's just some errors in the recording process. When he was recording with his mic was using the wrong microphone to pick it up. So I think it was coming through his laptop. So his audio quality is not the best in this one, but mine is coming through crystal clear through the microphone. And I promise you that this stuff is good content out there. So just a disclaimer on why his voice sounds a little bit weird in this one. But nonetheless, my stuff's coming through crystal clear as well. And I'm hoping you're going to get a lot of good action actionable ultra running tips from this as well. So hope you enjoy this episode, this interview that I did with Chad Lubinsky, talking about a wide variety of stuff, and enjoy the episode from my friend Chad on the Peanut Butter Mountains podcast.
Today, we have a very special guest, Joe Corcione. So for those that don't know, Joe is an accomplished ultra runner, as well as the host of a super helpful podcast called Everyday Ultra, which is, I've been listening to I listened to the Rim to Rim to Rim episode, which I didn't end up running because my buddy didn't get off work. Another story. But that was super helpful. But he has a bunch of other great episodes in there as well. And we're going to dive more into that in a second. But the other day, I was actually reading an article in which Joe was interviewed, and he described a huge change in his lifestyle, which ultimately led him to discover ultra running. And I found it extremely fascinating because it's kind of along the lines of my story and then similar stories I've also heard in the community. And so, Joe, first of all, welcome to the podcast. And then second of all, can you walk us back through that phase of your life? I'm super curious to know, like, what was going on during that phase of your life? What was that critical moment where you're like, I got to change? And then how did you find ultra running?
Yeah, 100%. And Chad, thank you so much for having me, man. Like, as you know, I was a big fan of yours even before we first met. And, you know, after we met too, it's just been so amazing, you know, staying in touch with you. And so it's an honor to be here. And dude, I love everything you're doing. So this is seriously, I could not be more stoked for this. So thank you again. And yeah, man, thank you. Thank you for asking about like the story and the article. Cause you know, a lot of the times when ultra runners are in the sport, or not even ultra runners, people who do these through hikes or long distance stuff, and I'm sure you can relate to, there's usually some semblance of story behind it, right? Whether it's someone who just wanted to get healthy, whether it's someone who wanted to be a better parent or wanted to turn their life around, right? Everybody's got a story. And I think that's what makes this like sport so rad. And so for me, like my story kind of came years back. And I know you mentioned, which thank you for being so kind, accomplished ultra runner and all that stuff. But I was not born that way at all. Like, in fact, when I first really was growing up and going into middle school and high school, like I was the most unathletic kid in the world, picked last for every single pickup game. Like I was known as the uncoordinated kid who caught a football looking really weird. Like I was just, and I never played any sports. The only sport I played was golf, which, you know, in some sense can be considered a sport, cannot. So I kind of consider it like a half sport. So, and I golf, so I'm allowed to say that. But anywho, that was kind of my background. And that insecurity of not being great at athletics, among the other insecurities, such as I'm not good enough, I feel like I need to be someone else in order to really gain the acceptance from others. I had all these insecurities growing up, and really what that led me to was an addiction to Adderall. Like, I was prescribed Adderall when I was a kid, had ADHD, bouncing off the walls, going nuts all the time. And, you know, when I was young, I got prescribed onto Adderall. The moment it really became what I call an addiction was, I had been taking it all throughout my years, and I was in college, and then I went to the doctor and basically did some tests, and the doctor said, hey, like all the tests check out, you don't need to take Adderall anymore. Like, you know, you're pretty much good. You can kind of sustain on your own. And I said, no, I need to take this thing. And I remember the moment I uttered those words, like in the back of my head, subconsciously, I kind of knew it was like, whoa, like you just said you need this thing. Like, where did that kind of come from? But I paid no mind for it. I was like, you know what? It's fine, whatever. But with that came a lot of really other poor decisions, right? I started to drink a lot more, started to get into harder drugs, started to party a lot, started to just get into a lot of things that just quite frankly were destructive, with all the sake of wanting to mask the one thing that I was afraid to recognize myself, which was I was unhappy with my life. And so all these bad decisions kind of led to a moment where everything just started crashing down. I was dating a girl for over 4 years. She left me, was going to get married to her. I left my job on Wall Street. I had basically moved in with my parents. I had alienated all my friends. I basically had nothing. And I was on the floor of my parents' house in my room looking at the ceiling. And I just remember thinking, like, what the heck am I going to do with my life? And I think, you know, there's always this point when people go through these challenges, and I'm sure you can relate, you kind of hit this point in your life where the pain is so loud that you can't ignore it, right? And you can ignore it in the past when it's low, right? By drinking alcohol, taking Adderall, doing, you know, whatever those things are to kind of mask those things. But at one point it gets so loud, you have to address it. And that was that point for me. And so honestly, what I did is like, okay, I got to do something. So I don't know why this was my first inkling of thought, but it was. I was like, I'm going to go to a bookstore and buy a self-help book. That's what people do when they need help, right? They read self-help books. And I knew of Tony Robbins and knew, you know, who he was. And I was like, okay, well, I've heard people hype him up, so maybe I'll grab that book. So I grabbed a book by his, Unlimited Power, and I read that book, and I read it in one sitting, and it's like a 400-page book. It's massive. I could not put it down. And the reason why was not, you know, I mean, not because of Tony Robbins, but it was the belief that unlocked in me of that you can become anyone you want to be no matter where you are at now. And for me, I had always taken the Adderall, the alcohol, the drugs, because I was trying to become someone else, because I truly believed that I couldn't change that. And the only thing that could was drugs. But then when I read this and said, you can do that without drugs and actually change who you are, no matter where you want to be in your life, that kickstarted everything. So I'll kind of pause there because I know I've been talking a lot, but that was the moment and the belief that generated this whole journey of self-discovery. And like, that's what I really say. It's like, sure, it's a journey of ultra running, but in the end of the day, it was really to discover myself. And that's the vessel that I use for it, is ultra running.
First of all, dude, chills several times during that story. Second of all, I love having other podcasters on my podcast because you guys are so freaking extremely literate. Like, it's crazy. A couple things there, man. Wow. So thanks for being transparent, sharing that story. Cause that, I mean, that is a lot. I mean, there's a lot there. So the first thing was, how was it coming off of the Adderall? I kind of like, what was that like? I mean, because essentially Adderall is, from what I understand, it's pretty much like you're taking meth in a certain degree. Right. So what was that process like? It sounds like, you know, from the book, you actually kind of gain the confidence in like, hey, I can do this. I like how you said, I can do this without the drugs. And that book gave you permission to do that. And I'm sure you were kind of probably reading that book as you were kind of getting off of the Adderall. And so like, what was that whole thing like for you?
Dude, yeah, such a great question. I love that you brought up the book because it's so funny, because literally after I finished the book, I'm not even kidding you, Chad. Literally after I finished the book, I put it down. I said, all right, I'm not taking Adderall anymore. I'm done. And so literally I was like, okay, tomorrow I'm going to wake up and I'm not going to take it. And I know I can do this. I can make it happen. Now, mind you, I'd been taking Adderall since I was in first grade. And at the time I was 24. So basically just like, you know, nearly like almost 20 years of just taking this like pretty much every single day of my life, right? So basically I wake up the next morning and I was like, all right, I'm not gonna do it. And I woke up and I got pumped. I was like, this is gonna be it. I can do this. Like, I'm doing all the exercises that he says in the book. Like, I'm like, this is great. And like, the first hour goes well. I'm like, I'm doing this. This is great. Next hour, I start to feel like this headache coming on. I'm like, okay, but like, I'm stronger than this. I can do it. By 2 hours after I'm waking up, it literally feels like someone's taking an ice pick and just shoving it through my brain. And I cannot think straight. Like, I am just like feeling like I can't think straight. I'm in so much pain. I'm super tired. I'm like moody. Like, I'm just going out of whack. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, what the heck is going on? Like, I thought I could do this. Like, the book says I can do this. Like, what the heck? And you know what I did? I went right to the pill bottle and I took one. And I said, wow, like, you were right. You can't do this. Like, what the hell? And that was kind of the thing where I was like, okay, this is going to take some work. And, you know, maybe I need to just develop some more lessons and some more skills and really build this belief into me. And so I actually did continue to take it for the next few months after I read the book. But in that meantime, I actually like used the time, because I quit my job, and I used the time to really just learn, how can I rewire my brain to have the beliefs to enable me to keep going past that pain. And what the thing that I did was, I looked it up and it said, hey, if you do hard physical things, you can do hard mental things. So one of the things that I did, so I said, okay, I need to build this belief in me. So I'm going to start running. Like, I heard running's hard. It's going to get me healthy. Why not? So I was like, great. Got out for a first run, probably made it halfway down my block and was just wheezing like crazy. And I was like, oh my God. Like, but I was kind of proud of myself. I was like, wow. Like, you know, I never ran and like, I actually did it. That was great. And so I just did a little bit more each day. And like, each of those micro wins kind of built the confidence of like, wow, like, that was hard, but I did it. And I signed up for a 5K for my first thing, a 5K Spartan race. And I was like, all right, I'm going to put it to the test here. And granted, I was still taking Adderall at this time, but I knew that what I was doing was pretty much training to go sober. Like, that was basically my training. And so I remember the day before the 5K, I don't think I've ever shared this on a podcast, so this is the first time I'm actually sharing this, but I remember going before that 5K Spartan race, I was like, I'm not going to take the Adderall today. I'm just going to go out and do this 5K without the Adderall and just see what happens. And throughout the timing, the 5K was hard. It kicked my ass. I was getting the headaches before and everything like that, but I did it. And I was like, whoa, like, I got chills right now. It's like, whoa, like, not only did I do a 5K, something that I never thought I'd be able to do in my life, but I did it without Adderall. And that was the first brick in this wall to self-confidence that was built. So I was like, great. So I actually just started to wean off from there. And I was like, all right, let me sign up for a 10K. Did the 10K, didn't take it beforehand. Then I signed up for the half marathon Spartan race, did that. And in that process, basically, like, I went to a Tony Robbins event. I'm not saying, like, the Tony Robbins event was the cause of this, but in that process, we learned the process of how you can actually, like, rewire your beliefs from a really strong standpoint, and which I'm happy to share for sure. But basically, yes. Went through that process, and then the day after that conference, I actually went home, took all the pills, flushed them down the toilet, and we've been pretty much 5 years sober from Adderall last week, 5 years ago, never went back.
Holy shit, man.
Yeah. Woo!
So what was it about that? You brought up a lot of really good points there. Micro wins, right? Which is something that I 100% agree. It's like those small wins, and then all of a sudden your launch pad starts to, like, increase, and, like, the things that you want to do, you start to level up. It's like you're beating the boss in those, you know, PlayStation 2 games, right? It's like you're beating the boss, you're going on to the next level. What was it that, if you can remember from that conference, what was it that was kind of the thing that, like, that really snapped it for you that he taught there?
Yeah, 100%, man. And I love that you bring up the confidence thing. I'll touch on the Tony Robbins thing too. With the confidence thing, like, one of my favorite quotes of all time is Alex Hormozi. He says, confidence is not built by shouting affirmations in the mirror. It's actually built by doing the things that you say you're going to do. And I was like, whoa. And again, I got chills saying that. And a lot of the times people think that they can get confident by just shouting out these mantras and these affirmations and everything. And there is some power in that. Like, don't get me wrong. But when you say those things, like, I can do this, but the back of your head's going to come up and be like, no, you can't. No, you've never done that. What are you talking about, right? But if you actually have evidence, hard evidence that say, I did this, I ran the 5K, I did the 10K, I did the ultra marathon, you can always pull that back and say, hey, I've done this. And your brain goes, yeah, shit, you have done this. So therefore, then you're like, wow, like, I actually can do those things. So I always say the real confidence is rooted in action. Real confidence is rooted in action, and you got to do the things that want to have you get the feeling to become the person that you want to become. So that's number one. Now, the thing that we did at the conference, and I will literally give the secret. I don't know if I got, like, a Tony Robbins sniper probably going to take me out to share this on the podcast, but I will literally share the whole thing. So they talk about something, basically, whenever you want to make change in your life, you can time travel in your mind to another point to justify why you shouldn't make the change. And I'll give you an example, right? So, like, for Adderall, right, I would say, hey, you know, I want to get off of Adderall and I want to make this change, right? But I can time travel, like, in the future and be like, hey, you know, it's going to get better by then. I know it's going to get better. It's going to get fine. Like, I'm going to grow and everything like that. So I don't even need to take it. It's going to take care of myself. I'm going to the future. Or maybe you have some evidence in the past to kind of confirm that it's still okay to do those things. Like, for me, I went to the past and I said, well, this has gotten me through school. I got good grades. Like, I got a job on Wall Street. Like, I'm kind of confirming it. So I'm time traveling, right? Or in the moment, you're saying, I'm present. It feels great. Now, what he does, you go through this whole process, and anyone can do this at home, is basically what you do is you sit down and then you spend, no joke, during the conference, it's like 20 minutes each section, but you spend 20 minutes visualizing all the pain that action has gotten you in the past, and then you move on to the present, and then you think about all the pain it's going to bring you in the future. So what happens is now you associate so much pain with this action, and our brain will do whatever it takes to move away from pain. So basically, your brain can't time travel to say, this is not good in the past, it's not good now, and it's not going to get better in the future. We got to change this because it's going to lead to so much pain. And so in that moment, I realized, like, I just really just deeply rooted it in myself, because here's the thing, and this kind of ties back to the first thing that I said to bring it full circle. Belief is rooted in action, but when you visualize something, your brain can't distinguish what's real and what's not. It actually thinks it's real. So you're kind of creating that action in your head too. So in that moment, you know, I remember just thinking about, like, all the people I hurt in the past, the pain I was going through now, and, like, where my life was going to be in the future. And I just remember sobbing like crazy, just like, oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. And that was the thing that did it. And then during the process of getting sober, when I fleshed out, I still got the headaches. I still got that feeling of that ice pick going through my head. But you know what I did? I thought of two things. Number one, I was like, I was like, motherfucker, you did like a half marathon Spartan race. You did a 5K Spartan race. You had nothing. Like, you had no athletic background. You can do this. And number two, I was like, if I go back to that, that's going to cause me way more pain than what I'm facing right now. And those two things combined, eventually the headache went away and I never even grabbed for those pills again.
What a story, dude. That article was great. This story blows that article out of the water now, actually. Holy crap, dude. I love all the context you're putting with this. You know, it's interesting because I, like I said, we're kind of talking about before it, but I've traveled along the same path, mostly with alcohol for me, starting at 15 in Wisconsin in the Midwest, where it's basically a religion, and going from 15 to basically 26, binge drinking the whole, you know, I mean, it was normal. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, you go to a state college, same thing, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And it was normal. Right. And so it wasn't until I got out of that environment. And it's like, I feel like you had this too, probably when you were back in with your Adderall and everything. Did you ever have like that thing in the back of your head? You're like, I know I'm meant for more, right? Like, I know that I'm better than this. And it would be this real, like, small little voice, right? But the drugs were kind of numbing that, right? But then as you go through that process, that voice gets louder. That voice gets louder and louder and louder. And now you're like, yes, like, I can do that. And, you know, some of those mantras that you're talking about and stuff like that, like, you know, one of the things I actually saw on your feed was when you were sitting down at an ultra and you're feeling like shit. And eventually you get up and you said, I don't know the exact quote, you're going to have to remind me, but it was a Jesse Itzler quote of something. And you wrote in your post, it was a really good, like, I love the context you provided in it, but it was basically like, I remember him saying this quote, you basically were kind of feeling poopy pants at the time, you got up, you said the quote, and then you got the job done, right? Walk me through a little bit of that. Is that something that you also kind of made the connection with? Like, I mean, it kind of sounds like it comes full circle with like the Tony Robbins, you know, and, you know, future pay, you know, all that stuff. So let's dive into that a little bit, that Jesse Itzler thing.
Oh my gosh. I love that you brought that up, man. I'm here laughing because it's you look at the video and it's just, I laugh at it every time.
I love
it. It's just so funny. Yeah. Thank you, man. I appreciate that. So for context on the listener. So a while back, I love Jesse Itzler. He's someone I look up to very much, not just in ultra running, but like life, business, family, like the dude's just like, to me, like he lives a very similar life that like I would like to like live essentially. And so I always just love his content. And so one time he was doing an ultra and he was sitting down in the chair and it was, I believe it was a 100-mile ultra. And he looks worked, like similar to you. Like literally the way that you described it was like how he was looking in there, just toast. And okay. Then all of a sudden he looks up and he looks at the camera and he just goes, it's time to put on a fucking clinic. And like, he's like, it's time to put on a fucking clinic. And he starts doing it. And I remember watching that for the first time and I was getting pumped. I was like, oh yeah. And then he like gets up and he starts running out there. And it was funny because in that moment, like I remember sitting in the chair and I was feeling that same thing. And I remember like, I don't know what it was, but like it just popped into my head and I was like, wait, this reminds me of this. And I was like, hold on, that got me pumped in the past. I was like, let's get pumped now. So I got up and I just go, it's time to put on a fucking clinic. Like, and I just start screaming that like, Jesse, it's just, I was like, it's time to put on a fucking clinic. And like, I just felt this energy just surge through me. And like, bro, my legs were so shot. Like, I mean, you see in that video, I'm literally getting hoisted up. I can barely stand. And like, literally like I'm about to go run 20 more miles, even though my legs are in the worst pain I'd ever felt in my life. And I brought back to that moment that fired me up and it said, it's time to put on a fucking clinic. And I think it's like, you can channel different people's energies when you're out there sometimes. Like, I think it's like so cool. And one of the things that I do is like, I think about the people who inspire me and I'm like, what are the things that they have that I know I have inside myself? And I think it was putting on a clinic in that one Javelina moment. So like the takeaway for anyone listening is like, I always say like, think about the times in your life when you saw someone inspire you, whether it's Chad, whether it's anyone else, and note those moments. Like, cause everybody knows, like, you know, you read a book, you listen to a podcast, right? And you get that emotional feeling, like it hits you, you know, like it just like everybody knows what I'm talking about. Write that down if that ever happens and then pull those things out in the moment and really channel, because you know why you're getting that emotional reaction? Because you see something in yourself that you can emulate and you can pull that out in that moment when you are hurting a lot. And it's real, because again, you're feeling that because you see it in yourself, and it relates back to that voice you were talking about, Chad. Like, that's that voice hearing and going, yep, that's me, in the back of the head.
Oh, I love that, dude. I love that. I, you know, for me, I have to like put, like, I have a Notion template of like all of my quotes that I just love, so like good. That I've heard, and I'll pull in screenshots and stuff. Cause like, you, yeah, it hits you in the moment, but if you don't save it, like, you freaking forget it sometimes. Right.
Yes.
And it's like, yeah, I put everything there, but I love how you're like, it spoke to you for a reason. Right. And so you need to use that as fuel. And it's like, man, in ultra marathons, you take anything as fuel. Anything, anything you can, you, I feel like you're just, it's like you're Klon, and you're just like, anything, like, I'll take anything, you know what I mean? So, I freaking love that. Now, so that is a great transition, because Joe is also an ultra running coach, and so I'm wondering, maybe that's something that you kind of share with your clients as well. And my question for you would be, like, you know, so when these people come to you and they're about to run this ultra marathon, right? A big piece of when you're working with them, I assume, is the training prior to the race, right? What are like two or three of the most common things people are maybe missing in their training as they're preparing for, let's say, 100 mile? Because honestly, I'm really obsessed with the 100 mile distance at this point, right? So, like, yeah, two or three things that they might be missing, you feel like?
Yeah. 100%, man. And I think there's really two kind of parts of it. There's like the physical part, and then there's really the mental part. And I'll kind of like talk about the mental part, because I know we kind of talk a lot about that. I think the biggest thing that a lot of people miss, even if they know they can complete the distance, if they're going for their first 100 miler, is how much you have to get good at suffering. Like, and usually people, if you've ran, yeah, like, you have, like, it's a skill to be good at suffering. It really is. And let me tell you, like, even if you are super fit, even if you are the most well-trained, even if you are the best athlete, 100 miles is 100 miles, and it's going to hurt. I have not interviewed anyone on the podcast. I have over 170 episodes with some of the world's best athletes. There is not one person who said that they've gone through a 100 miler and it hasn't hurt. It will hurt. And so I think the biggest thing is like really learning how to suffer, because I'll give you an example. Like, the first time I ever did my 100 miler, before the first 100 miler that I did, before that I did a 50 miler, I did 50 Ks, I did all these other races. Like, I did Ironmans. Like, I knew like what it was like to hurt. But, and I heard these stories before on this 100 milers of like people dropping at like mile 90, and like people dropping like late in the race. And in my head, I'm
like, what?
Right. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, how the fuck can you drop it? Like, when you're so close. And I remember my first ultra marathon, it was mile 97. I got a 5K to go, 97. Yeah. And I remember on the trail breaking down, crying, because I was in so much pain. And just the thought of going 3 miles more was like freaking me out. I was like, what the hell? And so I think even people know it's going to be hard, but you got to get good at suffering. So, but there's a way to get good at it. And the way to get good at it is obviously go out and practice it. So, like, what I do with athletes, right? So generally, when I'm going into like the long run phase of training, I always say, hey, like, are you confident that you can go through and handle this distance and really go through and have like the mental kind of challenges that come aboard? And usually they'll be like, yeah, I'm pretty confident, but like, I've never gone 100 miles. I don't know what that uncertainty is going to feel like, blah, 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 something along those lines. And I said, great. So what we're going to do is we're going to put you on probably like back-to-back 6-hour runs, or we're going to do like one massive 10-hour run where you're going to see some dark shit. Like, you're going to go through some thoughts that are going to be coming through your head, and like, you're going to have to battle those. And when you feel like quitting, you're going to keep going. And they're like, well, like, that isn't that going to like totally just get me gas? I'm like, no, it's not. It's going to actually build the skill, because again, like, bringing it back to the confidence piece, confidence is built by the actions you do. So if you're in the training, if you're in a run and you go through like an 8-hour long run, and ultimately you're battling these demons, you're battling these negative thoughts, you're overcoming those challenges, and you finish that run, you're like, oh shit, I did that. Now you have something real you can pull on, instead of just a pat on the back being like, you can do it, go get them, yeah, you know. So, like, literally, not only do we practice the physical, we practice the mental. Now, the second thing, you said two things. Second thing is the physical side. And this is something that you and I have kind of been talking about too. But I think from the physical side, one of the things that really is not applied enough in ultra running is speed work. And listen, now, generally, if you're just getting into running and you want to start building a base, you got to do the low intensity, easy stuff, like ridiculously easy stuff, low heart rate, like low intensity, do that stuff as well. You have to do that to start. And it's a great way to build fitness. In fact, most of your runs should be easy. However, most people take that advice and they say, that's all I should do. And yep. I think that's incorrect. Even if you're not trying to hit the podium, yeah. even if you're not trying to, like, you know, hit a PR and you're just trying to finish, it's actually so important to do speed work. Because what happens is you're building your VO2 max, and which is just a fancy word for how well your body processes oxygen. And the thing is, when you're running at a specific low intensity, you're taking a percentage of that VO2 max. So instead of just getting more efficient at doing that, you can increase your VO2 max to get more output, more or less, and basically have your body process more oxygen. And in turn, you're going to get faster. For years and years and years, all I did was run really, really slow for low. Damn. And I saw my pace improve, right? I was like 10:30, and then it was like 10 minute mile, and it was like 9:45. And then I kind of hit this plateau like 9:30, and then I started yeah. working with a coach. We did some speed work. My now zone, like recovery two pace, basically went from 9:30 to 8 flat in like less than a year.
What?
Yes. So now, granted, everyone's gonna adapt differently, but like, I had never done speed work before, and the adaptations you get with speed work are quick, and it helps improve your fitness. And like, you know, and just to kind of go into that deeper, just to cap things off, like, again, like, I'm not an athlete and anything like that. And like Javelina last year, I got like top 10 male at one of the most competitive races. Now, again, I'm not saying that to toot my horn. I'm saying that if you're listening to this and you have big goals, like, you can do anything you want to do. And that requires doing things that don't seem as obvious, like the speed work, like the going out and mental training. So wow. All these skills are learnable. And I always say, just to wrap this all up succinctly in this long answer, when an athlete comes to me, and I have this all the time, they're like, I want to do my first 100 miler in 7 months. Is that too big of a goal? And I always look at them and I say, it's never too big of a goal. Like, you can do whatever you want to. Now, again, if someone comes to me and say, I want to do 100 miles tomorrow and they haven't trained, I'm going to be like, okay, let's be a little reasonable. But if they come to me and say, hey, maybe it might not happen in 7 months, but it can happen. And so I always say, like, never sell your goals short. The way that we're going to get there might be different, but we can always get there. And sometimes people are afraid to state the goals that they want to do because they think that the way to get there is not possible. There's always a way to get there. So never, ever be afraid of defining the goal. And that's what I do with my athletes. So anyone who wants to come to me, they say a goal, we will find a plan to get there, and we will help you to get there.
You know, okay, a lot of things. Lot of
yeah,
things
I just threw that, that was a very long
no,
soliloquy.
I love this. No, number one, well, so you talked about, like, I want to come back to this in a second, but you talked about, like, stating your goal. And I know one of the things you love to do is state your goal publicly, right?
Yeah.
So we'll come back to that in a second. We'll come back to this that in a second. I got to put a note there. But the second thing is, dude, you nailed speed work on the frickin' head, man. I mean, so I only started recently getting into it within the last few months. Because I'm like, damn, like, you know, I can finish 100, right? Like, because I got good at suffering. Like, I got good at that suffering part. But same thing, dude. I was on mile 97. I'm crying too, dude. I'm like, fuck. This sucks. And I'm thinking, dude, I'm thinking I'm doing permanent damage to my freaking legs too. I'm like, I'm a little bit like concerned about how permanent this damage is going to be in my shins. I'm like, both shins feel like they're just like cracked open and, you know, just, you know, and I'm thinking, oh my God, dude, I'm screwed. So there's that part. But now that I went through that, I'm like, okay, I can do another one. I can get to that place now. But the other thing is I so relate to the 9:30 zone two pace, because that's about where I'm at right now. Mm. And when I saw how fast you did Javelina this year, I was like, dang, okay. And so then I saw some of your speed work videos and things, and I was talking to my buddy about it because he's faster than me. And I'm like, I run so many more miles. Like, I've done all these giant events or sufferings in the mountains. So like my zone two into, you know, zone, or my zone one into zone two is super great, but that frickin' VO2 max and the speed work I have really neglected. So I would love to explore, what are like maybe two of your favorite speed workouts with that you would maybe recommend for someone just getting into speed work right now?
100%, man. Yeah, absolutely. And so, and you know, man, like, it's like I hear it all the time, and I was in that same thing. It's like, I'm running all these miles, and like, dude, you've done these like long through hikes. And so like that, like, right. I mean, that builds so much endurance, like just the time on feet and everything like that. And mm-hmm. it can feel like, why am I hitting a wall? And it's like, you need like, here's the always, and to get a little bit more into the nitty gritty science, we generally have like three energy system areas inside of our body. So we have like our VO2 max, which is kind of what we talked about. Then we have the, like, our energy system that's responsible for clearing lactate in our body. So think about like when you're running and like you hit that point where all of a sudden your legs start feeling tired, you start to breathe a little bit more. That's because we kind of hit the point where lactate is built up in our body and it can't process it fast enough. So it forces us to slow down. That's by another energy system. So we want to focus on increasing that. And then we have our aerobic engine, which is the classic, you know, low and slow, zone two, easy running. That's that stuff. Now, the thing is, if you work on one energy system, you can see gains into it, but you're going to hit a point where actually there's going to be diminishing returns and you actually might hit a plateau. The thing all the time, so if I'm working with an athlete, and physiologically, this is shown to be true with any kind of program, once an athlete kind of hits that plateau in that thing, we switch into another energy system. Mm-hmm. So we either switch to VO2 max or we switch to lactate threshold. Now, the thing is, those other phases, those speed work phases, are actually going to be shorter windows of adaptation. So you're not going to be in them as longer, but the same thing goes for them. If you're doing a VO2 max phase, okay, you're going to switch to lactate threshold phase, right? And so like you always want to be switching out because you're stressing each of the systems in a different way. Now, when you stretch each system, you do work all three systems, but by focusing on one and going to the point where you kind of hit diminishing returns, that's where you get the benefit. So I know it went super sciencey on there, but that's kind of like the concept on there. So that's the number one. The other thing I want to say is, before you do speed work, if you've never done speed work before, don't just jump into an interval workout. Please, this is the way to get injured. The number one way to get injured is either increase your volume too quick or increase intensity too quick. So That is something I have to say as a disclaimer in my heart as a coach. So if you are trying to get into speed work, the best thing to do is, number one, lower your volume a little bit, because you never want to increase intensity and volume at the same time. And then secondly, what you want to do is start doing strides. So strides are a super simple exercise that you can do. You just go on an easy run. And then at the end of it, what you're going to do is, for 4 to 8 reps, depending on how you're feeling, you start at a slow jog and then you accelerate into not an all-out sprint, but a near sprint, for about 15 to 30 seconds, hold that intensity, then slow down to a jog and jog it out for a minute, and then repeat. What you're doing is, you're slowly weaning your body into that intensity. So it's getting used to that neuromuscular connection of what it feels like to go intense. Because the reason why just launching into speed work right off the bat injures us so much is because it's this new thing. It's working new muscles. It's working new things. And our body's like freaking out because it's not used to it. And it will just cause something to compromise. So I always suggest doing strides for at least 2 or 3 times a week for 2 weeks in a row, and then you can be pretty prime for it. After that, then there are some speed works. There's one VO2 max and one lactate threshold workout that I like. Both are very different, but they're both elements of speed work. VO2 max, I mean, a classic workout to do is really just doing four by threes with 3 recoveries. So basically what that is you do a 15 to 30 minute warm-up at an easy pace, do some strides. I usually like to do 3 or 4 strides just to kind of warm into it. And then you do 4 sets of 3 minutes at a 8 to 9 out of 10 effort. So if you think about effort on a scale of 1 to 10, you're going to be running those intervals at an 8 to a 9. So pretty freaking hard, 3 minutes too. And then you're going to recover for 3 minutes. And then you're going to repeat that for another 3 times. So it's 4 minutes total, or 4 times total, 12 minutes total time and intensity. That's going to work your VO2 max. You really don't need to do too much. Now, the more you progress in your speed work, the more you can up your time and intensity. I just suggest upping that time and intensity once every 4 weeks or so. So like, you don't want to just keep increasing your intensity, because that again can lead to injury. But if you just keep stressing it at that same level, at the 12 minutes of intensity for about, you know, 4 weeks or so, you should still get that adaptation response. So that's the VO2 max. Now, lactate threshold, the workout that I like to do, less intensity, longer intervals. So for me, what I like to do is three by 12s. So 3 by 12s, it's again, another 15 to 30 minute warm up, do some strides to lead into it. And then you do 3 sets of 12 minutes at a 6 or a 7 out of 10 intensity. So a little less intense, but still you're kind of pushing it a little bit. But you're doing this for 12 minutes now, and then you do a 6-minute recovery in between each interval, and then you repeat that for another 2 times. So that's your total intensity, time intensity is 36 minutes. So it's a little longer in there too, but that's going to work that lactate threshold phase. So again, to put everything here together, the way that I would structure it is do some strides, and then do the VO2 max. And usually those phases can last anywhere between, depending on the athlete and depending on where you're at, like 2 to 4 weeks in terms of that block. And then you can do a lactate threshold block for anywhere, again, depends on the athlete, anywhere between 6 to 8 weeks. And then even just to throw a little bit more training theory in, then you would go into your endurance phase, like where you're doing the low and slow stuff. Now, you're always doing every semblance of run maybe throughout the program, but those are going to be your main focuses. So that's generally how I like to structure the program, where it fits in and what some of my favorite workouts are. Hey everybody, I want to take a quick break in this episode to talk about a company that I partner with in the realms of hydration, because hydration is such an important thing out there. And you want to make sure that you're using gear that is not going to leak, not going to break, and not going to fail on you in the middle of an ultramarathon when it comes to carrying your fluids. And over the past few months, I've been using products from Hydropack because they are durable, they stay in a way that's leak-proof, and they have a guarantee in case anything fails on you. And Hydropack is great because they make tons of different things. They make soft flasks, they make handhelds, they make bottles, they make bladders, they even make filters to help you filter water out so you don't have to carry lugs of water if you know there's going to be water on your route to purify as well. So when it comes to all the different things that Hydropack has to offer, it has everything you need for your hydration needs, and it's going to last you a very, very long time. What's super cool about Hydropack's products too, whether it's their soft flasks or bladders, is that they can fit into virtually any type of pack or vest or hydration apparatus that you're using to carry around all your gear out there. And what's super cool is if you've used the Salomon vest before, or if you use something by Ultimate Direction, the bottles that are provided by there are actually made by Hydropack. So you know that they are tried and true and tested and trusted by some of the great brands in the world. And they're even trusted by me, as I will be using all of their hydration apparatuses, from bladders to handhelds to soft flasks, in my upcoming Cocodona 250 race, because hydration is important for 250 miles and I need something that I can trust fully, and Hydropack is the brand that I trust fully. So I'm so passionate about Hydropack, and if you want to try it out for yourself, you can grab 20% off of any handheld, bladder, soft flask, any hydration apparatus that you need from their website. If you go to hydropack.com, use code EverydayUltra at checkout to get 20% off your order. Yes, that's 20% off any hydration gear on hydropack.com, which is spelled HYDRAPAK.com, or go to the link in the show notes, use code EverydayUltra at checkout, and get 20% off your order. Remember, friends, stay hydrated, make sure you're using reliable gear, and I highly suggest you check out Hydropack. All right, everybody, now let's get into the episode again and dive right back in.
Well, if anybody had any doubts of you being their coach, they just have to listen to this segment of the podcast. I think that erased anything, and they're probably going to sign up at the link in the show notes that I'm going to put in there. Dude, that was freaking awesome. 100. So my own story with speed work, as I've been doing it probably the last 4 weeks, actually ever since Arizona, I started doing it. I was doing it at Javelina there. So I started there, and I was basically doing this pyramid of, so it was like 1 minute on, 1 minute off, 2 minutes on, 2 minutes off, 3 minutes on, 3 minutes off, 3 minutes on, 3 minutes off, and then back down the pyramid. And dude, fast forward to now, actually, last week, actually, I did my intervals, and I was at like my first 1 minute interval was, I think it was almost 35, 40 seconds faster than when I first did it the first week.
Hell yeah,
crazy.
Dude.
Crazy, because so awesome. I don't do speed work. And I was like, just getting this adaptation. But then, just as you said, I was on my fourth interval. So I was on the third going down, and I was about a minute and a half in, pulled my hammy.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Pulled my hammy.
Happens.
Yep, pulled my hammy. Immediately I stopped. I've been through this before, where if you keep running, you're going to be messed up for weeks. So I stopped running, tried to do a little bit of a jog, wasn't feeling it, dude. And so I quit that workout, hopped on the bike, finished out some kind of intervals there. Cause you know, you got to get the workout in, at least I do. And so now I've been healing that hammy. I can go low and slow on it and that's all I've done so far on it. But yesterday I was on a long run, and I actually, because I saw your video about the strides, I actually did strides for the last little part of it. Felt good. So I might be trying to get back into a little bit of speed work this week. I don't want to push it too much or anything, but I can absolutely vouch for the fact that if you have been going low and slow for a long time, be very careful with the speed work because you're absolutely correct. Your muscles and your ligaments, everything is not used to that intensity. So.
100%, man. Well, yeah, and usually, I mean, that was like what you said was the same thing with me when I first started speed work. I hurt my hamstring too, like, and so I totally feel you, brother. I
Interesting.
totally feel you. Hamstrings are usually the first things to get worked because what happens is the faster you go, the more pressure you put on your hamstrings. And generally, like, if you are running these slower miles, you're actually not focusing on your hamstrings as much. But then all of a sudden, in speed work, now like your hamstrings are just getting blasted, 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 and that's usually like the most common injury like that people kind of get with this. So there's kind of ways, as I mentioned, just like an easy phase in, like in decreasing your volume when you're doing speed work can help with that
I
too.
love
But
that.
another way that you can kind of take pressure off the hamstrings is doing the speed work on a slight to moderate incline. Because when you're doing that, your hamstrings aren't going to get that much pressure. Because think every time you basically hit your foot on the ground, you get 2.5 times your body weight through your body. Now, if you're increasing that speed, that force is going to keep going up and keep radiating through your body. But if you're going uphill, it's more softer, right? Think about like how you're prancing uphill sometimes, like it's like a little softer. So usually, like when I'm prescribing an athlete who's new to speed work, I usually say, hey, do it on a slight to moderate incline because that's going to be easier on the body for sure. And I think the most critical thing, like, is always just listen to your body throughout because some people might respond to speed work off the jump a lot easier. Some people, you know, you might start feeling some niggles here and there. Just like always be mindful of your body. And then at the same time, you know, and again, I know these factors aren't always 100% within our kind of bounds, but like making sure that you're sleeping well and hydrating well, like all those things,
Totally.
like I always tell my
100%.
athletes, I'm like, make sure that these things are buttoned up during this phase. And if not, like we might not be able to do it because the risk is too great, the reward, because intensity, although it can be super beneficial, it also has its risks as well, but all risks that can be easily mitigated and controlled for.
Dude, the day after or the day before I hurt my hammy, we did this girl came out and we did a 53-mile bike ride to Colorado and back.
Oh shit.
So crushed it on gravel, right?
Oh my
So go
gosh.
out and back. And so the next day I'm thinking, yeah, I'm just gonna like chill today. I'm gonna chill, do some yoga, sauna. But you know how we are as freaking runners, man. It's like the thing that I struggle with the most is I don't have an off switch. So what do? I go to the track, run intervals, get hurt. When I was already feeling kind of fatigued, right? And so totally. Now, when you are in that, so you said you do that speed work, right? And then you eventually, maybe as you get closer to the event, you're starting to prioritize more of the zone two low and slow. What's your speed work looking like in that period? Are you just doing it for maintenance at that time? Is it once a week? What's it looking like there?
Yeah, great question, man. I love this question so much because all the time it can seem like it's like, hey, we're doing like the endurance block closer to the race now. Like, do we just ditch the speed work entirely? I am not usually the fan of that. So what I like to do is generally, so we'll do the VO2 max phase, and our goal is to build up to two VO2 max workouts per week. So we want to build up those two workouts. Then we go into the lactate threshold phase, and in that phase, we can actually do the two lactate workouts a week because it is less intense. We can still keep those two workouts a week, but now we're increasing our long run a little bit because now we're taking down the intensity, right? So we're taking down the intensity, but now we can increase the volume. Now we're going into the phase where we're really increasing volume, so we want to decrease the intensity a little bit more. So think about like kind of like two like different like beakers on the side, and there's like a finite amount of water. I always like to like say, like, if you pour one into intensity, the other one's going to go down. If you pour one of volume, the other one's going to go down as well. Now we don't want to drain the beaker on intensity as we're going up in volume in the endurance phase. So generally now I cut it down to one lactate threshold workout a week as opposed to two. But now this is where we're going into those mega long runs that, you know, everybody knows ultra running for. So usually one lactate threshold work a week. If we're not seeing a good response with those, then Might throw in some VO2 max short interval stuff, depending on, again, because we don't want to, we want to make sure that we're hitting the adaptation zones correctly and not hitting that point of diminishing return. But generally, I like to keep one speed workout in there per week in the endurance phase, minus a deload week, which I usually like to throw in there depending on where the athlete needs to recover. But I usually like to keep at least one lactate threshold interval workout during that endurance phase.
Dude, so much knowledge, man. Love it. Again, this, if you guys need coaching, he's the man here. You know, in that article too, going back there, the I think one of the quick hit questions was something about how many what's your weekly mileage look like? And obviously, that's going to depend as you get as you're further out or closer to your event and stuff. But you were saying you could get up to as much as 100 miles a week.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about this, because dude, you're going to be shocked, I think, with this. I was probably averaging for my 135 miles a week, I think.
That's awesome. Dude, that's great. Okay. No, that's okay, incredible, good. Man. That's incredible.
I was trying to really prioritize time on feet. And so what I would do is I would go on these long mountaineering trips, split boarding trips where I was just all working on the suffering.
Right? Yes.
And so that's because I like running, but for me, I don't know if I can get up to 100 miles a week. I mean, if I really wanted to, I could. I don't know if like with the business, because here's the thing with me is when you get on these long runs, you come back. The first thing I want to do is not do work and yeah. creative work at that. Right. And so yeah. I'm going to either have to do that before I go out for these long runs, but typically you want to start them early in the morning, especially if you're in the mountains, right? In case something happens. So dude, tell me about 100 mile weeks and how are you prioritizing that? What's your body feeling like? What is that like? What is that world like?
Man. Dude, and I love that you shared your background of 35 miles and time on feet, because here's the thing, like you can definitely, like it's not about the miles, it is about the time on feet. And that's actually how I structure my training and what is seen as the optimal kind of training structure for ultra marathon athletes. So here's the thing, right? Because you could be doing 35 miles a week, but if you're getting in like 20K a vert or things like that, like that's a lot of work. Whereas like a lot of that 100 mile training was pretty flat for me. Like I was not doing a lot of climbing because Javelina, you don't really need to do climbing too much. So I was just doing a lot of flat stuff with not a lot of vert. But if I was training with vert with like 40 miles and things like that, like, you know, it might be 40 miles a week, but I might've get like 18K a vert, okay. which is a lot. So when I structure, and this is how I train too, when I structure athletes' workouts is always by time and not mileage. So I don't go to an athlete, or even for me, if I'm looking at my own training plan, I don't say, okay, I'm going to do a 5 mile run today. I'm going to do a 6 mile run today. And then on the weekend, I'm going to do a 26 mile run. No, it's today. I'm going to do an hour recovery. Tomorrow, I'm going to do these intervals. And notice how, when I said the intervals, they were in terms of time. So I'm going to say, I'm going to do hour 15 of intervals here. Then tomorrow, I'm going to do a 2 hour run. And then my weekend's going to be a 4 hour long run. That's how I do it. Now, generally, as you increase that volume and that time, your volume will increase. But here's the thing. If you gave someone a 26-mile workout, right? Let's just say there's a 26, there's two scenarios here, right? 26-mile workout to someone who's training for a flat race, and then a 26-mile workout for someone who's training for a really hilly race, like a Leadville or something like that.
For freaking ever.
Yeah,
exactly. If you're doing it with Bert, yeah.
100%. And here's the thing. That person probably has 8 hours time on the feet, while the other person has 4 hours on the time of the feet. That's
100%.
4 extra hours, and that's going to lead to just getting wonked. And I think the biggest 100%. Mistake that people make is they follow these plans based on mileage, and then they get to the point like you where they're coming in and they're feeling like zonked. They're like, why am I so tired? Like, blah, blah, blah. It's because, yeah, you spent 8 hours on your feet. Whereas if you just say, hey, here's a 4 hour workout, it's going to normalize for all those factors. And here's the other thing too, right? Let's just say there's an elite athlete and there's me, and we prescribe the elite athlete a 30-mile workout and prescribe me a 30-mile workout, it's going to take me so much longer to recover than an elite athlete for that 30-mile workout. So doing it by time normalizes as well. And here's the beauty, because you said, like, how do you get it in? Like, you're super busy. Most time, ultra runners are busy as hell. And here's the beauty of time-based runs. You can easily schedule it in. You're like, this is going to take me 4 hours.
100%. Yeah, you're
no
right.
No more or less. Whereas, like, if it's 26, oh man, now I actually got to speed up my effort so I can get in the 26 because I got to be home for the kids. And then you're into the wrong intensity. So, like, I just based on time, that's always the biggest, I think, mental block when I work with new athletes, because we're so trained to go by mileage. But I'm just going to be frank. It's fucking up your training. So like do it by time. And it's going to be so much better, not just from an adaptation perspective, but from a scheduling perspective. Cause in the reality, like my mantra is you should be able to hit your ultra running goals without blowing up the other priorities in your life. Like don't make your wife be the ultra running widow or husband, you know, be the ultra, you know, the ultra running person who never sees their partner around. Like you can go ahead and literally like be the best business person, family person that you can and get your ultra running goals. And yeah, I think time helps to accomplish that and make you a better athlete.
Freaking love that, man. I also think that time is also a little bit less daunting to look at.
Yes.
Saying, hey,
yes.
I have a 4-hour run versus a, you know, 20-mile run or whatever, 15-mile run or something
yes.
like that. You know what I'm saying?
It, 100%.
You can digest that a little bit better, I feel like.
Right, because then you know, you're like, okay, this is 4 hours. Whereas, like, if you're going 26 miles and you have 6 miles to go, you're like, this could take me, depending on how fast I'm going, 2 hours or 1 hour. Like, I don't, like, and it's that uncertainty that always throws our brain into a tailspin. So, yeah, it makes it less daunting and it makes the task easier to kind of manage, too.
I love it.
Yeah.
Okay. Wanted to talk quick about the Javelina. We got to talk
yes.
about this.
Oh,
I was
game.
Also at Javelina. I unfortunately didn't get to meet Joe. I'm going to meet him next time. We're going to do a podcast.
Yes.
We've talked about this before. We're going to do it
I'm
before
so
the Javelina. One thing that I'm curious with the Javelina, because I always feel like when you are doing an extremely challenging event, adventure, anything, there's always that turn back moment where you can keep going or you can not. So was there any turn back moments when you were running, but not only that, but also during training? Because I've had a turn back moment when I was doing my 100-miler or when I was training for my 100-miler where it was a kind of make or break run for me where I was feeling poopy pants, didn't want to do it, drove 3 hours back over the Cascades, it was still raining, the whole thing. And it was one of those things where my girlfriend at the time was like, oh, you don't have to do it. She was trying to be nice. You don't have to do it. If it's becoming a job, you don't have to do it. And I just sat there just sulking, right?
Mm.
And I knew if I didn't go on this run, this would be it for the training.
Mm-hmm.
And it would blow my confidence. I knew that too.
Mm.
So I went on the run. I did it. And from there on, there was no question whether or not I was going to be running the 100, right? So
yeah.
Curious, in training and or during the race, what were some of those moments for you?
Yeah, for sure, man. So it's kind of two different, I'll bring one from training and one from the race. So I'm usually I'm very diligent with my training. It's such a high priority in my life. You know, if it's on the calendar, I get it in. Now, during the build up for this year's Javelina. Now, I guess to give you some context, last year at Javelina, so I live in Arizona, Phoenix, and the race is in Fountain Hills, Arizona, which is about an hour away from Phoenix. So I live near the course. Last year, I didn't do too much traveling in the summer. So like basically all my long runs, like I was out there on the course. Like I became the local legend on that thing by 20
wow.
runs. And so I was just practicing every single weekend, doing
That's
every
cool.
long run on there, like as much as possible, cool. just to get the course, visualize it, all those things. This year, I probably ran on the course maybe 3 times. Now, the reason why that was is because I was traveling so much, man. Like I was, man, like my summer of travels was nuts. Between I was doing travel for work. I was doing travel for crewing and pacing people. Like we had some leisure travel. I was visiting family. Like there was one stretch, I think, like there was like, I think, I want to say 3 or 4 weeks during the year where I was in 5 different states in 1 week. And it was just like, just nonstop traveling. And dude, I would like, yeah, it was nuts. But I was like, I'm going to get my training in. And I think like, I remember getting to the point right before like a turn back mm-hmm. moment where I was looking at my travel schedule and I was like, man, is this even like,
right.
is this realistic? Like, mm-hmm. can I get the build that I did last year with all this travel and all this commitments that I did? And I said, you know what? Like, let's just try it and see what happens. And I remember this week exactly. It was one of those weeks where I was in 5 different states in 1 week and I was able to get a 90-mile training week amidst all that travel. And that was that moment to me where I was like, wow, like if I just wrote that off and saw my schedule and was like, it's not even possible. But I didn't even say I can do it. I said, let's just give it a try. Like that's, I was just like, let's just give it a try. And I think sometimes people think that they, when they have an idea, they have to like, and I do think that there's something in fully committing for sure, 100%. But I think when there's a semblance of like, this could go wrong, just say, let's just try. Because you know when you say that, there's not as much risk on the line. Whereas if you just say, fuck it, I'm just going to fucking go for it, blah, blah, blah. You have all this risk on your line. You kind of like, ah, I don't know. And then if it doesn't go perfect the first time, you're like, ah, fuck it, whatever. Yeah. But if you're like, let me just try, you're going to go out and try. It's kind of like that saying fuck around and find out. The more you fuck around, the more you find out. Like the same things go through, just fuck around and find out. And that's what I did in this training. And I was like, oh, I can make this happen. So amidst all my travels, amidst doing all this stuff, like I was able to get in that block. And I'm glad, you know, there was that turnaround point where looking at my schedule, it was like, dude, there's no way you're getting in this training. But I just tried and it made it happen. Now during the race, so this is my, oh gosh, I don't even know. Second time at least doing the golden ticket at Javelina, but I've gone through golden tickets a few other times. And this time around, at the third loop, I realized I was pretty much out of reach of that golden ticket. And I had been working at this for so long. Like, this is my second year doing it. My legs were like, just felt so sore, like the sorest they've ever felt in my entire life, even more so than last year. And I remember being at that crew station and I was like, you know, like, man, like, why am I even, you know, trying this? Like, why am I even trying? Like, why am I even trying? Like, blah, blah, blah. Just kind of like, and it wasn't even just because I knew I was going to finish the race, but it was this like turnaround point of like a career almost. It was like, why you keep shooting for this golden ticket, man? Like, you keep coming up short. But then one of my friends who was crewing me said something that like just hit me right in the moment. This is what I always tell my athletes too. And sometimes in the moment, you know, I feel like, you know, you need that person to tell you this. He said, hey, this is all building blocks for the future. And I said, you know what? That's right. And I said, great. Like, sure, this race to me was an L, but this L is going to turn into a W in the future, and I know it's going to be there. And so I think it was just removing the situation from what it was and knowing it was going to be a building block in the future that helped me to keep going. So instead of turning around, I just kept moving forward, as painful as it was. And let me tell you, dude, every single step of that race from mile 40 on was like injury level of pain without an injury. And it was the most painful experience of my life, but I knew that if I DNF'd, that would be mental mark that I would never be able to shake off. And I didn't want to give that self to me. And now I have something where to build up, to bring this full circle with the confidence thing. I now know that if I can push through that pain, I can fucking do anything. So that's where I'm at with that.
That is a great spot to end that end this episode, dude. That was perfect, man. Oh, it's like you had that in your head the whole time. Full circle, baby. I love that. No, it's interesting to see just a perspective shift of when your friend said that, you looked at the race completely differently than what you had just been doing it 5 seconds before he said that.
Yeah, 100%. And it was just like, boom. All right, well, let's fucking go. So yeah, man, it was rad.
Put on a clinic, baby.
We're putting on a clinic next year at Javelina, both Chad and I. So it's going to be amazing. Well,
I think you'll be putting on a clinic, but Javelina might put a clinic on me. Although I don't want to say that. I can't say that out loud, right? Because, you know, I don't like that. I can't say it. Now I'm going to put on a clinic at Javelina. So,
dude, there's two open job spots at the clinic. It's me and you. Let's go. let's go apply and get accepted for those spots and put on this fucking clinic.
I love it, dude. Okay. Well, Joe, dude, this has been absolutely amazing. Like I said, love interviewing fellow podcasters. You're extremely articulate, extremely knowledgeable, very passionate with what you're doing. You can tell by the stories that you tell, the, you know, examples that you bring up, the clients that you're coaching. I mean, dude, awesome, awesome work. So I really encourage everybody to look down below in the show notes for when I link up all of Joe's social media and all of that stuff. Is there anything that I guess besides social media, is there any other place that they can find you, or where is the best place that they could find you that I could link up for them?
Yeah, Instagram is usually the best place, like for sure. But like, if you are interested in coaching, there's usually two ways I'm kind of going about it. So I am almost full. I still have some availability. I'm taking on some more, and I'm actually in the process of actually transitioning out of my full-time job to do coaching full-time, which is incredible. So that's why I'm taking on more athletes, which is amazing. So, being that I have such small things, I'm really taking only, like, if people are super serious about this kind of stuff, either email me at everydayultrapodcast@gmail.com or just shoot me a DM on Instagram that just says coaching. And then, yeah, if you say you came from Chad's podcast, I'm happy to give you a little special gift, even if you're not signing on with coaching. So, but anyways, awesome. Best place, either DM on Instagram or just shoot me an email, everydayultrapodcast.com, and I'm happy to talk through coaching. We can hop on a call, talk through your goals, no pressure. I'm not a fucking, pressure sales guy. So don't worry. I just want to see if it works. And if it does, make it happen. If not, I still wish you the best in your endurance journey. So that's what I'm here for.
Ooh, you have a newsletter too.
Yes, newsletter. Yes. So Everyday Ultra newsletter is free ultra training tips every week in your inbox. It's really in-depth shit. I really only go by science and go by the things that actually work. No BS stuff. Totally free. No catch. Again, I'm not going to fucking sell you anything on this thing. It's just going to give you pure value. And then that link is in my link tree, which... I mean, yeah, it's probably best place to post it.
We'll link up. Yeah.
It's in there.
I'm going to be signing up for that after this.
Thank you, man. Too, so. Appreciate it. Thank you.